Moses has gone up the Mount Sinai. This is after they've been delivered through the Red Sea, after the plagues in Egypt, the delivery from bondage. And it's now that the people are entering into a covenant relationship with God. And so Moses is up there. God says this to them: "You've seen what I can do for you, and I've chosen you as my special possession, dearer to me than all other people. And I want you to be a kingdom of priests, a holy nation." This was the plan. This was the goal. They're to be a kingly, priestly people, both to be a king and to be a priest for all the nations. This was the plan for Israel, not to just be this self-contained sort of community, but to go out to everywhere, that they too would have a governing kingly faculty and a priestly sanctifying role in the world. And that's what a king is somebody fundamentally who guards and protects. We can kind of think of the bad kings who, you know, rule and are tyrannical, but a good king is one who protects his people. He protects the borders. That's what he's there to do. And a priest is one who sanctifies. So we kind of have the temporal order and the spiritual order. That was Israel's role. And then God goes on, he lays out the Ten Commandments. He says, these are the prescripts by which you'll know that you belong to me. And then let's build something beautiful. We're going to build the tabernacle, the place of worship, the place where all nations can come to find communion with the living God. And he said, I want you to take all your gold, all your finery, all your possessions. I want you to put it in a big pile, and we're going to make something awesome out of it. Now remember that gold, that's the gold that they got from the Egyptians. God had made them so favorable, the Egyptians so favorable, the Israelites so favorable to the Egyptians that they said, just get out, leave, and take all of our stuff with you. And so that was the plan. They're going to build the Ark of the Covenant, the altar, the whole tent of meeting. It was going to be a beautiful thing. All this doesn't happen, right? Why? Oh, yeah, that happened. The golden calf. They were busy. They had already spent all their wealth, all the stuff that they got. They put it together. They piled it down. They melted it down, and they built a molten image out of it, a false god. They put it to their own purposes, their own use. They said, "This is the God that led you out of bondage to Egypt." And this is indeed the stiff-necked people that we were talking about just recently. So they don't get to be this kingly, priestly people that they were supposed to be. They blew it. And we see them again going from being led, being shepherded by God, to just shepherding themselves. They just wanted to do it on their own. And whenever they tried to do it on their own, things went really poorly. When they give themselves over to God, things seem to go really well. And this is the image that the gospel begins for us. Jesus looks around and he sees the people and he says, "Oh, they're like sheep without a shepherd. They're just wandering aimlessly. There's nobody to protect them. There's nobody to guard them. There's nobody to govern them. There's nobody to direct them in the right way to go." And he's moved with pity for them. And this is still the way the Lord looks down. He looks at the world and he says, "Oh, they're like sheep without a shepherd." Now, we are still called to be that priestly and kingly people. This is what St. Peter says in his letter later on. He says, "You are a royal priesthood." And so if we're a royal priesthood, if we're to be kings and priests, that means we're to be shepherds. That was actually the favorite image of the Old Testament and the scriptures, for the king is shepherd. Right, the greatest king of Israel is David, a man after God's own heart. And what was he? He was a shepherd. And what kind of shepherd was he? Was he the kind of shepherd that's often spoken poorly about by Jesus, by Ezekiel, who would, you know, take the best of the flock and slaughter the fatlings and use the wool for his own? No, he was the shepherd that would go out and search for the lost sheep. He was the shepherd who snatched sheep out of the jaws of lions and killed bears with his bare hands. That was the good shepherd. That was David. And he's an image of the perfect shepherd, the heavenly shepherd, the king of the universe, the great high priest. And so now we are taking over for the role that was lost to Israel. We're the new Israel. We're here to be a kingly and priestly people. And so that should bring up two questions for us. who do you guard and protect? Who do you guide and foster? Who are you watching over? Who are you sanctifying? Who are you teaching the ways of God? That's what it means to be a king and a priest. And so if you think about it and you don't have anybody on that list, then we might be falling into what the Israelites fell into. I shepherd myself, and I guide and protect myself, and I look out for number one, and that's it. But that's not going to go well for us. We don't want to do that. We want to let God shepherd us, and then we are called to shepherd others. Obviously, the word pastor comes from that word, the shepherd, to pastor his flock. That's what a pastor does. And I'm pretty sure of who my flock are. It's easy for me to tell. But who are your flock? And it's something that the bishops in our diocese have been talking about a lot lately as we're implementing the synod process. And one of the things that Bishop Williams did at his last parish, he had little small groups of people, and he said, these are led by pastorcitos, little pastors. Yeah, I'm the main pastor here. Well, he's the main pastor, but I'm the main pastor here. But all of you, too, have to be pastors. And I've seen this in a beautiful way in the last several months, kind of flowing out from the rescue project, where these small groups have been walking together, and as the small group and rescue ends, they continue to walk together, and they continue to look out for each other. And there are certain people who have been walking in the faith for a long time, and people who are just coming back into their faith, and people who aren't even Catholic yet. And those people are more experienced, have been walking and ushering and guiding, pastoring those others. That's exactly what we're looking for. And that's exactly what we need to do, because there's so many people, some of our young people, some of our people who have moved into town, some of our people who stop in randomly and just trying to get back into the faith or have questions that need answering. And if we're just pastoring ourselves, just looking out for ourselves, then we're going to miss the needs of the people. We need to pause like Jesus did. We say, Jesus, show me how you see the world. Show me how you see the people. Show me the people who are in need of a pastor. Help me to be that shepherd for them. Who do you want me to walk with? Who do you want me to share my faith with? Who do you want me to help, to guard, to guide, to govern, to sanctify? That's something that all of us, and I want all of us to be thinking about that. Can't just be our children, even though that is a main role for us, especially parents with young children. That's your flock. But those of us who don't have dependents anymore, well, who's your flock? We're not done. We don't get to say, yeah, my flock graduated. Flocks don't graduate. They're always in need of being guarded and guided and sanctified. So to be looking for those opportunities and take advantage of them when they come, and to pray the Lord to help you with that. The other thing that we see in Israel is this corporate collective goal of building their temple, to build the tabernacle, to be that place where all nations can come and have relationship with the living God. And that too we see is part of our collective role as a parish family. The generations that have gone before us have built this beautiful, beautiful church that we don't own, and yet we all own, right? We all have to chip in, and yet none of us, it doesn't belong to any single one of us. It's a beautiful thing when, you know, we have passers-by who come, it's like, yeah, this isn't their parish, but it is their parish. If they're at a baseball game on a Saturday afternoon and they have a gap in between the games and they say, where's the nearest church? And they come over for mass with their cleats on, it's a beautiful thing. And that's what we exist for them, for those people who are passing by, for anybody and for all of us, for our children and for the children of our children generations from now. And I do want to pause on that note, because one of the things that we have an opportunity to do right now, our generation, is to continue the building of this church. And by that, I mean in a very, very practical and literal way, we need a new roof. And I've been talking about this a little bit here and there over the past couple months. The shingles that we have on there, we think are like 80 years old. If anybody can tell me a different number, I'm happy to entertain that. But the best we've got, I did talk to a 90-something-year-old parishioner the other day, and she said, well, I remember when we redid the shingles, but she might have been like 10. So that would have been 80 years ago. And nobody else has been able to tell me that they remember us redoing the shingles. So we are in dire need. There are some places where sunlight is streaming through, and we can't let that linger for very much longer. So I am calling on all of us to step up as a kingly and priestly people to continue to keep this the roof and this building open and available for all nations to enter. And so the bids that we're finalizing now are coming in at about $400,000, which isn't as exorbitant. I've known priests who had to raise much more money for a roof. So we don't have any damage that needs to be repaired. We just need to get rid of the shingles that are have asbestos, so there's an abatement that has to go in, and then we're putting in a new shingle, a metal shingle that will last a lot longer. It'll look really beautiful. It'll be really, really awesome. It should give us another 40 to 50, maybe even 60 years after this. So, but that's not pocket change either. It's not something that we can just pass a basket and feel like, hey, we have the money. So I'm really asking every single family to prayerfully discern and consider what you can do and what God is calling you to give. Remember what God says to Moses, hey, take all your stuff, bring it to me, and we're going to make something beautiful out of it. And we can only do it if all of us pool together in that way. So to give you a rough figure of what we're kind of looking at, this is my breakdown. Now keep in mind, I haven't had a math class since my junior year of high school. So numbers might not be perfect, but based on who the number of families that typically give and the number that we need, this is what we're looking at. I need two families who are going to be able to give $25,000. And I know that those families are out there. I need 9 families who can give $10,000. I already have 1 pledge for $10,000, so I know that that's a possibility. I need 18 families that can give $5,000, 24 families that can give $2,500, and 30 families who can give $1,000. And if we're all pooling together and doing that, we can really make this happen. Now, some of you are already thinking, like, okay, I mean, we have some money set aside. We could do that. That would mean we wouldn't be able to take this really epic vacation we're planning on, and we'd have to take a little bit less of an epic vacation and still have just as many memories. Or maybe I'd have to wait 1 year to buy that new car. Or maybe, and those are sacrifices that, yeah, we're gonna have to make. I think some of us that maybe the one that we start to like, ooh, but if I did that, then what if? Well, what if the economy turns? I know they're calling for a recession, and I know that the costs of everything keep increasing. Yeah, I know. But do you really want to see God work? This is the amazing and beautiful thing. If we let God shepherd us, if we let Him care for us, guard us, guide us, He will. He will. And it's always amazing. It's always beautiful. So the longer we think about the what ifs, the more we're trusting in ourselves and not in God. And I would say one last thing on that note too. You know, sometimes like, oh, but you know, what if? And I say, okay, you know, so if it does happen, if worse comes to worse, and then next month you don't have money for groceries, then please call us and we will give you back your donation, or we'll help you out. That's what a parish family is meant to do. We help each other. And so as we pool in together, we're not going to forget about those who are still in need. So I know some of you can hit those numbers, and some of you are like, wow, those numbers are well outside of our possibilities if we were to make radical sacrifices. And you might be in the realm of $500 or $250. That's fine. We can spread this out over the course of the year. We can give online. We can give in any ways that we normally give. And let's just remember that we are being called to do something that God does, that He's entrusted to us, to look around at the world and say, they are a world that are walking around like sheep without a shepherd. How can I contribute to their well-being? How can I guard them? How can I protect them? How can I sanctify them? In a very real way, we do this here. I'll end with the words that Jesus gave as He's sending out the apostles on this very scary mission. He's saying, don't take anything. Just go and you know, you'll be fine. And I'm sure that they were scared to death. And He ends with this. He just says, without cost you have received, without cost you are to give. And I just imagine the apostles hearing that and saying, yeah, you're right. He's given me everything. And if I give it away, he's gonna take care of me. And the same with us. There's nothing that we have that we haven't been given. We didn't earn this building. We didn't raise this roof. We just inherited it. And so we have this great opportunity now to give from what we've received, to give in a generous and beautiful way that the Lord can continue to give and lavish on his children because he loves us. We are his special people, his chosen nation, a people, a royal priesthood, a special people close to his heart.